Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is How to Murder Time, a podcast about games and things.
Hello everybody.
Watcher.
Another week.
Yes.
Another show. Let's more stuff.
Talk about some stuff. Absolutely. Shall I kick right off with my usual?
Go on then.
I say usual, but Planetside 2. I'm not going to be playing much longer. I've decided to hang it up a bit. I'll come back to the why and we'll talk more about it. But I've written Galaxy Acrobatics there. Yes.
Okay.
This is something we do on the old Five Rounds Rapid Nights. When you're a bit bored, or as is often the case, TR own everything and have 99% population, we decide we just muck about with the galaxy and the warp gate. We've perfected a number of stunts. Right, okay, so the first one, the air-to-air transfer. This is when you're in the wrong galaxy and you need to get to the other galaxy very quickly. I can't imagine why this would have any kind of practical use whatsoever, but what you do is you take Galaxy A, piloted by yours truly, and Galaxy B, piloted by one of the other members of the team, and then everyone gets in Galaxy A, and you fly Galaxy A up into the sky as high as possible, and then you try and fly over Galaxy B, who is hovering on the way down.
Uh-huh.
Yes, and then everyone jumps out of Galaxy A and attempts to, as they fall past Galaxy B, hit the E to enter vehicle key as you're flying past. If you time it spot on, you'll end up sat in Galaxy B.
Excellent.
Fantastic.
How often does it work?
I don't know. It works a lot in films and things, jumping from planes into other planes. Or was I thinking of Saints Row 3? I don't know. But
either way, those are both perfect examples.
There's a lot of crazy stuff that's done in films with skydiving, and we do it in Planetside 2 as well. I don't know. We had a go. I dropped about 8 people out of my galaxy, and I think one or two of them actually made it into the other galaxy, so that was quite impressive.
Okay, so the failure rate's not great, but it's better than zero, so it's still doable.
It's still doable, yeah. Almost nobody died as well, because as you jump out of the galaxy, you don't take falling damage, so that's good. Well, I think one of them landed on top of it and then just got in through the top, which was quite cool. The other one actually managed to hit it as they went past. I forget exactly who. It was quite good. Most of them missed, though, so that's something we need to practice a bit more. And then the other one, this is even cooler, right? On various base towers, you have these jump pads, which whoosh infantry in a big arc through the sky onto other places around the base, other towers, the spawn room, whatever. Useful for getting around quickly when there's a base defence going on. But if you fly a galaxy up and park it just in the right place, then everyone who hits the bouncer ends up smacking into the side of the galaxy. And if you push E just before you do smack into the side of the galaxy, bounce off and fall to your death, you can jump into the galaxy that way. And we did a fantastic full squad pickup at a biolab assault after it all finished. It all calmed down. Everyone had tidied up, and I just flew the galaxy up to just about the right sort of spot. I had to cheat a bit. I had to watch some other people bouncing before our lot jumped in, and I was hovering in the sky, and the whole squad just went bang boing boing straight into the galaxy, and I got random tells from spectators. It was brilliant. I'm so proud of everyone. It was really good. Yes, the galaxy, it's a lot of fun, and not just for dropping people into combat zones. You can do all sorts of crazy with it. It needs a bit of work with the piloting. Precision airdrops, airframe, as many ranks of that as you can. That helps with the turning and the manoeuvring so that you're just in the right spot to pull off some awesome. So we've been doing that. I've written Goddamn Harasser there. Harasser. I don't know. Whichever. The little stupid three-man dune buggy. I've noticed that these things are the new cool, and they tend to use them in packs. So this is something we've seen the NC doing a lot. I don't know if the TR have similar things, but they tend to drive around in packs of 4 or 5 of these things at incredibly high speeds, so you can't get them with the turret guns or anything. And they've got the stupid giant rocket launcher on the top, and they just spam rockets in your general direction, and it's an absolute nightmare. And it doesn't even matter who's in the back of the damn thing at that point. It's probably a heavy with a rocket launcher as well, and they can put out a ridiculous amount of explosive rockets coming towards you, and there's almost nothing you can do about them. We've been desperately trying to lay mines and hoping they run over them. The problem is, Planetside 1, by default, when you insert it into the adaptive construction engine thingy for engineering, you were allowed to place 20 mines at a time. In here, you're allowed 3 anti-tank mines if you put all the certing in. And there's absolutely no way in the northern half of Indar, for example, the wide desert plain, that you're going to put 3 mines down and have a random quad bike or dune buggy run over and blow up.
I would say that it does sort of defeat the point of mines.
Well, yeah, it's just very... Yeah, you put a couple inside the base drive-through road, you know, and you hope people come in. But also the little icon that hovers over the mine, which shows you it's a friendly one, often doesn't show up properly. So most friendly tank drivers just get into the habit of absolutely just destroying any they see. Ah. So, yeah, it's so basically, I just can't really think of an effective counter to the Harrisser. I suppose, you know, you can try chasing them around with tanks, but their superior manoeuvrability means it's almost impossible to land any kind of lob shot projectile on them. I guess the Lancer, I mean, I think Teppo was having some success with the Lancer there, which is the Vanu specific only anti-vehicle multi-shot laser cannon charge-up thingy, which is pretty useless against most things, but apparently is good for walloping, fast-moving light stuff. Mm. It's got a very short travel time. It might work. I don't know. I just think it's a little bit overpowered when used well. But then I suppose most things used well are quite powerful. Don't know. Found myself swearing at them and getting quite cross and angry with them all for charging around. The NC one in particular, because I think they get the Enforcer option on the roof, which is a pretty hefty sort of rocket launcher, grenade launcher option. But then even the common pull Halberd, which you can find in the old weapon shop there, it turns what's essentially a little Mad Max dune buggy into something that's comparable to a heavy tank. It's got a lot more manoeuvrability and can put out nearly as much damage. It's terrifying. You know, I've learned to try and stay indoors a lot more, where the Vanu don't do terribly well either. I've heard that there's a Vanu Max nerf coming to the super bonus viability mode. Apparently it's going to get a charge battery. Previously you could just leave it on and go and do your thing and be competitive and enjoy the game, and now they're going to give it an 8-second charge. Presumably that'll be in the form of some sort of battery. So you can't have it on all the time, you just got to pick your moment, do some firing, turn it off again. So it's good to see the Vanu being sort of constructively adapted to back to the underdog status, you know, because yeah. We had a lot of people using Vanu Maxes and being, you know, gaining territory and making gains and stuff. I'm not bitter at all. I don't know. I've decided, though, that it's not really my problem anymore. I've sort of come to the end of my, I don't know, patience.
Have you seen everything you want to see in it?
I think I probably have. Yeah, they've done... The most recent big update, they've added a whole new set of alerts, which are the sort of two-hour events that come up every now and then. But they've added new ones where it's not capture an entire island, it's capture every biolab or capture every amp station. And I just don't see our side having the coordination necessary to do that. We usually end up with 1 out of 9 on these whenever they kick off. But in general, I think... Oh, I can't remember how long I've been playing it. Pretty much since launch.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how long ago was that? I can't even remember.
6 months.
Something like that. Yeah.
So it's a good run.
Good run, yeah. But I just find myself lately just logging off cross, you know? And I just think, well, I don't need this in my recreational time, you know?
No.
I don't want a game, a toy, a recreational hobby to make me angry when I do it.
A good rule of thumb is don't do things you don't enjoy unless you really have to.
Yeah, yeah. And it's nothing to do with the people. Of course, 5-round rapids are great. And that's what's kept me going as long as I have, I think, is you know, the camaraderie and the social of it all. And these are all great people who I'm sure I'll see again in other games. We've got the Mumble server going anyway. And I'm not going to kick everyone off that and shut it down. It's there. It's going. Yeah, help yourselves to it if you're still interested in Planetside. But I think, yeah, it's just making me more cross than not, you know? I mean, there are good moments when I have a good run with the Eidolon battle rifle doing my little snipey thing, or, you know, we successfully push and drive people off a base here and there. But by definition, it's a game that cannot be won. You know, there's always going to be tomorrow. And if I take 6 months off or whatever, it'll be almost identical when I come back, I expect. There'll be the same sorts of fights. It always was the way in Planetside 1. I consider myself a huge fan of that game, and I never actually stuck it out more than 3 months at a time, generally.
I've always considered it a bit weird that you were playing a competitive PvP game.
I just don't have the speed and the killer instinct for it all. But I always manage to find ways to enjoy myself, and ways to feel like I'm helping and so on. But I don't know. I think I'm just a bit tired of it, you know? It's the same old, same old. I think the population imbalance doesn't help a lot either. I mean, I had a quick fling this afternoon, and I think Vanu were 28, 26%, something like that. Terran Republic were in the 40s or higher. And you just think, yeah, what's gone wrong here? Why have you created a three-faction PvP game where one faction appeals significantly more to most players than the other two? And the NC are usually sort of bobbing around 33s or whatever, but for some reason not so many people want to be Vanu. And that's all right if you're going to role play it up and everything, you pick the side that has the ideology you like the sound of the best, or the colour scheme or whatever. But But what does that do to the game balance? You know, I mean, there was just we were just being beaten all across Indar this afternoon. No, not Indar, Amarish, yes. And you know, there was a couple of sectors near the warp gate we were occasionally trying to push out into and getting stomped on. You just think, wouldn't it be more interesting if some of you TR rolled on a different side, you know? Would the game not be more interesting and entertaining if the sides were approximately equal more often?
Well, I think people, yeah, they do tend to go to the side that looks like they're winning always, and
well,
you're never going to stop it.
It's the Fourth Empire effect, isn't it? You know, I mean, yeah, without basically... giving out a side when you create a character without having it assigned for you, there's no way they're going to control that. I mean, you know, there's ways to cope with that. You go where the rest of your people are, which is typically Indar on the Miller server, and that usually has 33% value because eventually you'll get a queue and they're letting more people on, and that queue will equalise it all at 33%. I don't know, the TR on Miller seem more organised there. They seem to move in packs more. They seem to have more outfit names working together and so on. I had a quick look this afternoon. I think there was 4 open squads stroke platoons in the joined squad list and on the entire server. Yeah. That suggests that most Vanu are there soloing it up, I suppose.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, it might sound like a rage quit, and in some ways it is a bit, but there's a number of reasons, and mostly I'm just tired of it. I've had enough.
And I've
enjoyed it immensely, but yeah, I think obviously I will be back dipping in and out here and there. It's free to play. You can never quit a free to play game, you know. But I think time to hang that up for a bit.
Yep.
Have a bit of a rest. Come back refreshed in a couple of more months down the line, I think. So I'll put Dr. Toteg in charge of 5 rounds rapids. And he's a good leader. He keeps people moving forward. He keeps the targets going. He protests an awful lot when you put him in charge of a squad, but he does the work. He does it well.
Well, you don't want a leader who wants to lead. Anyone who seeks the power doesn't deserve it.
No, Dr. Tarek's definitely not a power-mad despot. No, that's definitely my takeaway from all that. So I think it's in fine and comfortable hands there.
Excellent.
So that's me for Planetside 2. Probably won't be talking about that for a few weeks now.
Oh, well.
Over to you.
Okay, Remember Me.
Remember Me, yes. I've seen you playing a bit of this.
Yes, which is a game.
It's new. It's hot. Is it Steam only, PC only Steam?
No, it's all three.
Oh, right.
I played it on PC.
Yeah.
It was the second game in my let's try buying everything on PC instead now plan.
You've gone mad in Steam, haven't you?
Maybe.
So what's Remember Me all about?
It's set in 2080 something, I think, in Neo Paris.
Neo Paris.
Apparently in the future everyone's going to put Neo in front of everything.
Yes.
Which funnily enough is Paris.
Neo Paris sounds all right though. It's not like Neo Wokingham or something.
Neo Croydon.
Neo Paris will do, yeah. Is the Eiffel Tower still there?
Yes.
Ah, there you go. That's how you know it's Paris, you know.
Yeah, I know. I got some great screenshots of the Eiffel Tower. You never have to climb it, though. It's basically a run around fighting and do the mantling along walls type game.
Okay.
So it's a bit of a beat-em-up with combos. Mm. Now, the core feature on this is the combos that you do. You have a 3-long one, a 5-long one, an 8-long one, and a figure 12-long one, which I've never managed to even bother
12?
But you configure it. So you've got 4 different things that can go in each step of the combo. There's attack, heal, speed up your special abilities, recharge, or make the next thing happen better.
Okay. So it's not a question of just mashing the right buttons as in doing it in real time. You actually sort of construct the combos before you get into your fights.
Yeah, so if it's a fight where you think...
Sounds a bit more forgiving.
You can do it inside the fights as well.
Okay.
The annoying thing is if you die, it resets them. So you have to keep doing it. But so if you're doing really badly in a fight, you can reset it all to the 3-chain one to all be heals. So you'll still be doing damage, just less damage.
So you can sort of tank it up a bit, yeah.
Yeah, because there's one enemy type later on. Which has an electric shieldy thing, and every time you hit him, you take damage. So I was only hitting him with healing chains, and so I was coming out, I was taking damage, but healing more.
Okay. Sounds quite interesting.
It is. It's a future in which memories are manipulated.
Like in Johnny Mnemonic.
Very much like in Johnny Mnemonic, right. But better.
Okay.
There's this big company who...
Is there a big evil megacorp?
Yes, there is indeed.
I hate the future. I hope I never go there.
And there's the plucky rebels who are fighting them. You can manipulate people's memories so you can get rid of bad experiences and make everyone happy. That's the idea. And you start off as this young lady who's having her brain wiped. Because she's a rebel and against them.
Do you wake up not knowing who you are?
Maybe.
I love those.
There's also a revelation later on, which you can probably guess.
She turned out to be the villain.
Nearly.
I love those.
That's not a spoiler, that's actually...
Well, if that is the case, then shame on any of you for not seeing it coming.
No, you don't actually turn out to be the villain. You just turn out to... Funnily enough, that no one's actually telling you who you are.
Is it an interesting story?
Yes, I found it interesting.
Well, it sounds a little bit cliché-ridden for the sci-fi dark future.
It is very cliché-ridden,
but it has
a couple of things in its favour.
Mm.
One, it's French.
Ah. Therefore, instantly very stylish.
It is painfully stylish.
There you go.
And the music by a chap called, what was his name? Olivier de Reviva.
Never heard of him, but...
is fantastic.
Okay.
It's sort of electro, the Prague Philharmonic Orchestra as well.
Oh, yeah.
And it's sort of remixed Philip Glass style in places as well. And it's fantastic. I really love the soundtrack.
Uh-huh.
The other cool feature it has is rewriting memories.
Right.
There's four, I think, times in the game where you have to change someone's position, should we say.
Mm. Does that make it into gameplay then?
Yeah. What you do is you go into their brain and...
Rewriting brain mini-game.
Yes. And it plays out this scene.
Right.
And you play it through the first time, get to the end, and it says, right, you have to, say, make this person think that the bad company did something, so they turn against them.
Okay.
So what you do is you have to rewind the memory and fast-forward it, and then you, as you go through, there's these little wibbles on the... scene, mm-hmm. which means you can change something, so you can do stuff like move a cup holder in or out, or take off a seat belt, or change which drug's going to be injected during a procedure.
Okay.
And you have to get the right chain of these to get the outcome you want.
That sounds very interesting, actually.
And there's some achievements in there for along the way for just getting different outcomes which aren't right.
Oh, yeah.
But stopping a car crash from happening and making everyone happy kind of thing.
Excellent.
And, yeah, that's a fantastic mechanism. I really liked it. It's a brilliant idea.
Okay.
And they only use it four times.
Well, that sounds a shame.
Yeah, but it's because they take 10, 20 minutes to do.
Okay.
So it's not just go in, you're moving some blocks around. If it had been more of them, I think I would have got annoyed.
Okay. Oh, fair enough.
A lot of the reviews actually put it down because they thought they didn't have enough of them, but I thought it was just right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
You're fighting people like you who have been memory wiped, but you got out before the end.
Ah.
Before it, and you managed to escape and get out. But you're fighting these people who are wandering around down below, sort of mindless zombie-like. Although calling them zombies is a bit of a stretch, I would say.
Yeah.
Because they are actually... mind-wiped people with various abilities that they've been given as they were weaponized.
Well, sort of super soldier type of experiments. Yeah.
Yeah, and that side is all fantastic.
Right.
There's a couple of minor points.
Oh, here we go.
You have to tailor your combos to the enemies you're fighting.
Okay.
Which is good when you can figure it out, but there's some enemies, like the very, very last big fight against two teleported guys... I found it incredibly, incredibly hard.
Mm.
Even dropping the difficulty down, it didn't help.
Had you missed some things along the way? Is that a problem?
No, I looked on the internet and I just couldn't figure out how to do it. I think maybe these guys are invisible and teleport, and you have to use one of your special abilities, which are on a recharge thing, so it only comes up every 2 minutes.
Oh,
but
God.
You can cut off 10 minutes every time you use one of those.
Right.
Things in your combo to reduce that time.
So you have to use a particular ability to make them vulnerable or something.
Yeah, you do that, you stun them, then you can hit them lots.
Okay.
But they also have five different guys around them who are their defenders who are constantly spawned, so there's always loads of them.
Oh.
And they get in the way, and the targeting doesn't quite work right, so you'd be trying to help wail on the stunned guy.
Yeah.
Well, some of these guys are immune to being stunned. So they come in, they get in the way, and you start attacking them when you don't want to, and it's really, really
annoying.
Sounds
quite challenging, yeah.
And that was really frustrating yesterday.
Yeah.
The other one was there's these invisible enemies which only become visible in the light.
Right.
And, you know, a couple of times you fight them, fine. There's a constant light there. Then there's this one fight where the light comes on and off.
Oh, God.
So you have to use... Yeah, and it gets a bit awkward. Yeah,
you got through it, though. Doesn't sound like you enjoyed it, though.
No, that was when I realised I should be being more intelligent with my combos. Because I could have made that fight a lot easier for myself.
So it does give you the tools to get the job done. Yeah. You just got to work out how and what to use.
The last thing which is really annoying, is instant death bits.
Hmm.
There's one
bit. Quick time events?
Oh, there's loads of quick time events, which aren't too bad.
Hmm.
But there's this one bit which really annoyed me, which you're running along a glass roof.
Yeah.
With a gunship behind you firing, and the bits are collapsing down, and you have to do all the jumps right and get across.
Running away from the attack helicopter.
And it's really, really annoying, because at the start of it, after you die, it plays a really, really annoying voice clip of him taunting you every single time. Why do developers do this? It really drives me nuts.
Because they hate us.
And the other one is, there's a couple of bits in the game where it didn't quite feel like it worked well with the mouse. It was trying to do stuff with the camera, moving the camera, and then move the mouse, it went a bit wrong, and this was one of those times.
Yeah, does it feel like it was written for a console?
Yes, but it works fine on the PC the rest of the time, especially in gorgeous resolution, where it does look stunningly gorgeous.
Excellent.
And all in all, I would recommend this game, only you'll get really annoyed just before the end.
I saw you playing some of it, and it did look... It was very arresting. It looked fantastic. There's a good sort of future skyscraper there. The UI, all the there's a very stylish sort of package there. I thought, well, I might have to have a look at that. Mm. Yeah. So, but the basic meat and potatoes of it all is basically combo based sort of beat 'em up type.
Yeah, you basically got you've got kick and punch.
I haven't played one of those in a while.
Yeah, you've got kick and punch, and you just have to get those right. It's very, very forgiving most of the time.
Okay. Would you recommend that for the PC, or does that look like it probably should be a console?
I'd recommend on either. It'll work perfectly fine on the console.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah. So, your turn.
Okay, I'm going to talk about Star Trek Online, which I'm playing as well.
You quitting this one?
No, not quitting this one, because I got this sort of cow clicker thing going on with the duty officers. And also the reputation grinds as well. I seem to be sucked into those a bit as well. That and it's Star Trek is. Well, I just like the space combat. I just enjoy it. It makes all the noises. It's spectacular. It looks great. It's, you know, it's not terribly taxing on the dexterity or anything. It's not hugely challenging gameplay, but at the same time, it's rewarding and satisfying. I just like flying, especially the Christmas spaceship, when I got all set up for cannons facing forward and having to actually fly the thing like a proper fighter craft, as it were. It's quite enjoyable. I'm enjoying that. I got a lot of time on my hands as well, so I've taken it upon myself to work on the fleet grind.
Excellent.
Yeah, we got a fleet in there, and you get a fleet starbase and a fleet embassy, and nothing works in those places when you get them.
It's shoddy, isn't it?
It's really poor.
The first episode of DS9, when they take over DS9 from the Klingons, the Cardassians, more of the station work then.
There's no point trying to explain it off as a nod to any kind of law.
No, it's
isn't.
Not. I'm just saying that the specific time when it was meant to not work worked better than now.
So to make the things work in the starbase, and presumably at the very far end of all this grinding, it will be as functional as Earth Space Dock and the Academy and everything else. It'll have everything you need.
And you're less plebs.
All the services. Yeah, but a more refined and exclusive clientele. Yeah. But you've got to put a colossal amount of work into getting all this stuff up and running. And it comes in the forms of queueable tasks. You pick from three different tasks in a side window, and then it's very similar to the reputation system, for anyone who knows what that's like. That's a sort of somewhat more toned down and achievable solo version of it for the top end gear. But for the fleet stuff, it's basically designed for a guild of about 50 people working away two or three nights a week on for an hour or so, you know. And here's me basically on my own. There's a couple of others logging in and doing stuff as well. Tepo's pitching in as well, and there's a few others popping in here and there. But I've thought, well, since I've got all this time on my hands for unrelated employment reasons, I'm going to put it to some constructive use. With air quotes. And then I thought, no, I won't put any to constructive use. I'll play Star Trek instead. These need huge amounts of purchasable commodities, things like medical supplies, entertainment provisions, in the hundreds at a time. One bar to fill up needed 1,000 provisions. You can only buy those 100 at a time. They don't cost too much. One of them needed 250 Mark 1 photon torpedoes, an item which does not stack and which cannot be bought in numbers larger than one. So that was a good 45 minutes. I'm never getting back. But yes.
You've got to wonder what they're doing with it.
I know. They're chipping away to it. I hear rumours that they're going to do something to this ridiculous fleet starbase
Make
grind.
It worse.
Well, to give small guilds a chance to not go mad and have a nervous breakdown like I have already with this game. And I don't know what form that'll take. I don't know when that's going to drop either, but I'm guessing it's going to be quite similar to DDO, where if your guild has under X members, then the requirements for everything drop considerably, which means that your small amount of friends can actually get on and get some of this stuff done. But I've even queued up some of the 200,000 dilithium cosmetic projects as well, because I'm feeling quite confident about
Optimistic.
All this. Yeah, well, that's quite impressive with one of them. At the moment, they're all on you know, the limited availability ones. They're redoing the ability to pick those from the list again. They're all available to pick. I'm hoping, at least I assume, that once you've picked it and slotted it into the list and have started working on it, that then is no longer limited. It will just let you finish it, even if they...
How much was...
Because I think all this stuff finishes 20th of June, they'll all go away again, so...
How much dilithium was your ship?
My ship? I can't remember, because I converted it all through Zen, so yeah. I don't really remember the rates offhand, but I know to buy a ship at the tier 4 level is 120,000, so yeah. You know, it's significant stuff. You can earn about 8, well, you can earn as much as you like, but you can convert and use 8,000 of it a day, so even if I grind crazy, and I'm trying not to do that, I'm sort of alternating between stuff for myself and stuff for the fleet. There's some quite cool gear to be had at the top end of the reputation grinds as well, the Nukara, Omega and Romulan stuff. There's very different sets. Yeah, I'm just sort of quite enjoying playing that little incremental plus 1% gear in slot type game going on with the spaceships. The ground combat's a bit face rolly like usual. It's very hit and miss. Yeah, I do some here and there. I've written STF Muppets there. Most of these marks and fleet marks and this, that and the other come from joining random pickup groups, or you can join as a team for a number of different strike forces, which are basically sort of small instanced scenarios that you go in and do. Usually you have to do these with absolutely no communication with any of your four random people you've never met before.
Okay.
You just have to... You just have to assume that they all know what they're doing, which largely they do, but you do get some real idiots in there, and some quite shouty ones as well. Generally, it all happens in silence, which is about the best you can hope for with MMO pickup grouping these days. Well, that's a terrible state of affairs, isn't it?
It is, rather.
But, so I'm still playing quite a bit of that. I enjoyed the Secrets of Nimbus new episode chain they put in, but it's back to the top end, working over the usual things. Defend Enlo... There's a Romulan starbase that you need to defend as one of these new strike forces from the Lachi, which are your new monsters du jour of the new Romulan faction. They look like greys. That's quite disappointing. Because at first you only ever see their ships and their drones and robots, and I thought, oh, that's all quite interesting. And then you see some of these actually turn up in this mission, and they're really disappointing. But they turn up, and this you're running around this Romulan starbase doing three stages of stuff. First stage, you have to go and basically a load of devices spawn and have a progress bar, and you have to shoot them before their progress bar runs out or they vanish. So you get as many of those into phase one. Phase two is run around and rescue 6 Romulan engineers from little teams of aliens who are trying to abduct them. And then stage three is kill the big bad boss who's trying to blow up the reactor, and that's fairly straightforward as well. But these aliens, these Ilachi, are just an absolute nightmare of crowd control. They got drones that have AOE gas around them, which causes you to be stunned. They use heavy stasis turrets, which cause you to be stunned. They do a lot of stuff which causes you to be stunned. Basically, you spent a lot of this mission... Oh, yeah, and the skittering saboteurs, which are sort of little green and grey spider robots which run towards you and then jump up. And it's quite a cool animation they've added, actually, where it's on your face and you're trying to knock it off while screaming, and then it blows up and knocks you back and sets you on plasma fire as well. So basically, do not use a melee weapon in this in this instance. That was my first mistake. I was charging around with the sword, because the sword's pretty good. Sword is really good. I mean, you might think, you know, science fiction future with millions of different sorts of guns. Why would you use a sword? Borg. Because apparently our primitive weapons are no match for their superior intellects or something. But basically, when you shoot Borg in the Borg strike forces and whatever, you can do X amount of damage and then they adapt and you get a debuff and you have to use a remodulator, which takes 4 seconds, which is an eternity to get rid of that debuff before your weapons will do damage again. But apparently they don't adapt to being hit with a big bit of metal.
Yeah.
That's what I like. So I spend most of the Borg stuff charging around with a sword, and I went straight into this one with the sword out and thought, ah, all right, I'll give this a go. And I just spent the entire, like, 20 minutes lying down and standing still and frozen and knocked back. And it was quite a... I was incandescent at the end of it all. A real water garble rage quit, you know. And I thought, no, hang on, okay, right. So I went away, I calmed down a bit, had a cup of tea, watched some telly, and I thought, no, I know, I just need to use a gun. If only there were an object that could cause damage at a distance. Yes, so one of my many guns, I think I've got the Jem'Hadar ground set with the polar and auto rifle, whatever thing. It seemed to do the job. And as an engineer, I spawned loads of floaty drones that run off and start shooting people, and the quantum mortar is always a party pleaser. You just dump that in the centre of the main room and it can hit pretty much everywhere, through walls as well. It can hit nearby rooms. So, yeah. I'm just quite enjoying pottering around in there. Nothing much huge to report. We're doing the little fleet of new Romulan fellas on the Tuesdays. We're sort of slowly working through the story there, but it's a bit confusing, really, and the mayhem of five players all go mad with photon torpedoes and plasma beams and stuff to work out what the actual story is. So I may have to replay some of those on my own at some point to work out what the hell any of it was.
You never get the story out of a group.
It's that's why there's very little story at all in any of the top end strike forces. Just go in there and go crazy with your guns, you know, which is fine, you know. Story stuff generally is more of a solo activity, I found, in these MMOs. But typically the bad MMOs make you pick up group to do the story advancement, which just never works well. You're never gonna appreciate it properly. So yeah, why don't you talk for a bit?
Okay, I'm gonna talk about The Last of Us.
Okay.
Which is the latest game from Naughty Dog.
Hmm.
Who made...
Who done... no, gone.
Uncharted.
Uncharted. Okay.
Yes, purveyors of fine Sony PS3 exclusives.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is a game.
Yep.
Now, forgive me if this sounds familiar. You are a man.
Yeah.
The world's gone to pot, and you're all living in basically refugee camps everywhere with the military controlling everything because a fungal infection got out into the populace.
Right.
And turned everyone into some form of zombie.
Ah, zombie apocalypse game.
And this is a game about you taking this young girl mm-hmm. on a journey across of America because she is quite important.
Uh-huh.
Now,
okay.
I know that you've probably never heard
no.
that plot before, because it is very original, this
yes,
game.
Yes, I'd never heard of an escort mission before.
Yeah. Oh.
Okay. So what's she like? Is she annoying? Does she path badly? Does she aggro stuff?
Well, there's two of them at the moment. Oh, they've been aggroing stuff and pathing badly. Sometimes the AI notices them, sometimes it doesn't.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, it's a bit painful.
Ah.
I'm going to concentrate on the bad things first and then go on to the good things.
All right.
The other bad thing is, because it is a Naughty Dog game, it uses their engine.
Right.
Therefore, the shooting is bollocks.
Right.
It's really, really slow. You zoom in using your eye sight. You slowly move across the screen to point at where you want to shoot, and then you get shot by the enemy before you manage to target them.
Right. That doesn't sound terribly
on the plus
satisfying.
Side, there's so few bullets in this game, you never really get to shoot into anyone. Basically, it's a
sharp bit of metal. That's what you want.
No,
swords for everything.
You say that,
yeah.
But they use the Dead Rising method of items only last for a certain amount of time.
Oh, good.
Only a certain number of hits, and you can see how many hits they do. So that's really annoying too.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, as long as you remember to save the last bullet for yourself, you know.
Well, I don't even need that. You just sort of stand still and shout a bit, and then you'll die quick enough. They've also got a crafting system.
Yes.
So you can take items and modify your weapons and whatnot, or make things, just like in, say, Dead Rising.
Right.
Dead Rising does it better.
Mm.
Yeah, those are the bad things, really.
Okay. You're sounding pretty wretched so far.
It's the thing that this... Okay. The thing that probably isn't apparent is every single media site has rated this game 10. Out of 10. It is apparently the best game ever made, and I don't see it.
Should we have our Metacritic rant again, or should we save that for a whole show?
I think actually Metacritic is slightly better reviews from the actual rank and file rather than the media.
So everyone likes this except you, who seem to be just finding problems with it. Is that the problem?
Yeah, it is, really. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Mm.
Well, for the start, I know exactly what's wrong with you. Straight from...
Here we go.
Well, straight from Remember Me on the PC to this on the PS3.
Right.
So it went from 2000 and whatever by 1000 whatever.
So resolution.
To 720p.
Wow.
That is not a comfortable transition.
No.
It looks like...
Might as well play it on an iPhone.
The iPhone's got higher res.
Right.
Yeah, no, that was... I had to stop playing last night because it was just really annoying me, the graphics.
Yeah.
Coming back to it today,
mm-hmm.
Yes, the graphics are good. I would love this game to not be on the PS3, though. I want it to be on the PS4.
Okay.
I want it to be in high res. The art design
being held back by the hardware, is that the problem?
The art design is fantastic. The ruined cities are beautiful.
Okay.
The facial animations are something to behold. They're some of the best I've ever seen in a game.
Yeah.
The acting, it's a Naughty Dog game. I don't know what Naughty Dog do, but whoever is their director for their voiceover sessions, it is fantastic. He gets a brilliant performance out of people, better than any other game does.
Excellent.
But the actual game itself is bugging me constantly, and I should be enjoying it, and I'm not.
I just
walk too slow. You can't shoot. You can't fight. It's a stealth game. It's a shooty game. There's an awful lot of hiding behind waist-high cover as well.
Mm.
It's a shooty game where you can't shoot. A combat game where you can't do combat. And a stealth game where you can't stealth.
It sounds like a very good zombie game, though, because essentially the zombie game is about futility and how you are just always going to die. It's just how long can you survive?
Yeah.
Is that what you're getting from this?
I think so.
The zombies always win.
Yeah.
That's why I don't like zombies.
At the moment, the zombies are winning in this.
Yeah.
Oh, just so unoriginal. It what really feels like, I was playing it, and the game it really wanted me to play after, I got a little way through and I thought, I should be playing Half-Life 2.
Really?
Yeah, because you're going through the city at the start, and it's all great, and the atmosphere is great, and you've got these oppressive police around and stuff. And I just think, yeah, I'd rather be playing Half-Life.
Mm, which is technically excellent and has a good sense of humour about it all.
Yeah. Yeah, much better than this, Half-Life 2.
Okay.
Half-Life 3 will be excellent. Please finish Half-Life 3.
Half-Life 2 is about an 8-year-old game, isn't it?
And the rest. I had a look, actually. I think it was 2005 that they put out that the one out that put the HDR stuff in that.
Okay, cover. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's about 10 years.
Blimey.
Yeah, it's a shame. It should be brilliant, but I just... I don't get why all the reviewers love it. I think it might be another repeat of the GTA 4 debacle.
Everyone liked GTA 4 except you.
No.
And most of the people who bought it.
No, GTA 4 is a good game. It just, if you ignore the driving physics, the walking, the shooting and all that.
I did try it. I got about into the second driving mission and gave up because the cars were like trying to drive bouncy castles around a bouncy castle place.
I was playing it on
metaphor
PC.
Failure.
I was playing it on PC the other week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's still as bad as I remember. But anyway, yes.
Okay.
The problem with that was it got really... really high Metacritic. In fact, it's the highest rated game ever made.
Good
GTA
grief.
4.
Yeah.
Because it came out and everyone said, oh, yes, it's GTA, we must love it, brilliant. And
I don't like
it.
Which says that Metacritic is useless to me.
Well, no, it's all of the reviews as well. It's not just Metacritic, all the websites. And everyone said they love this, and it's exactly the same thing. I just think, you know, it's Naughty Dog. Everyone said it must be brilliant.
I sense a topic show coming.
I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, last of the
not let this end here.
A bit bollocks.
Right. Oh, gosh. And broken. Excellent. Okay, I'm going to talk about The Saboteur. My probably what might be my last foray into Xbox gaming in a while.
Why is that?
I'm just fed up with it. Or I had a moment during the week when, you know, when it does something and wants you to re-log into your profile and I'd forgotten the password and then it turned out that the email address my profile is attached to doesn't exist anymore and I had to basically go through the gamut of customer services and so on. It's all automated. It sorted itself out. But I just got so angry with it all. I thought I just shouldn't have to do this to play my own single-player save games. I shouldn't have to connect to a goddamn internet and tell you my details and right, yeah, anyway. Rage taking over. Talk for a moment.
So basically you're just fed up with having to type passwords.
I'm fed up with, well, no, it's not even that. Why do I even need a profile? I never go online with the Xbox. I never play multiplayer gaming. I just want to put a disc in a drive, push go, and I want it to save its files locally without any kind of tagging and profile analysis and DRM gubbins and all the rest of it. And this is just Xbox 360. I'm not even looking at the X-Bone with what it intends to do about all this. I remember the days of consoles where you had a physical cartridge and you just put it in the top, push go, and off you go. You know, yeah. Perhaps they didn't have save games. You may have had to put a little memory thingy in the side to save your progress or whatever.
So what you're basically saying is it's not as good as when you were a kid.
I'm saying that modern technology is rubbish. Yes.
Yeah.
So yes.
Anyway,
clearly, I'm not that excited about the X-Bone. Saboteur, I've got the bridge kit. Finally found the bridge kit. That was doing my head in, trying to work out how to blow the bridges up. Turns out you need to have done a bit of story before you get the materials you need to be able to do that with. So now I'm going off on a spree. There's a perk you can unlock if you blow 5 bridges up. I think the perk is that planting explosives whilst disguised as a Nazi is no longer suspicious.
I would say that's more suspicious.
Especially if you've got a history of blowing up bridges. Yeah. And I got to that particular mission was the fight along the top of a train mission, which is third person action shooter trope number 47 in our playbook.
Yep.
Bloody hell! I just thought, oh God, what you want? Oh, of course this train's going to start moving. Of course the guy's on the train. Oh right, now I've got to run the entire length of it with people on the roofs who were never there before. And what machine gun nests on the roof? Where did they come from? I don't know. If I could count how many times I've had to run the entire length of a train shooting bad guys to get something in the cab before, then I'd have 10 pence or something. I don't know. My metaphors are all over the place today.
They are, right? Yes. I don't think you rehearsed.
I haven't rehearsed, no. But yes, so that was all quite good. I'm still quite enjoying the game itself, but it's just the faff. I mean, and it seems probably quite petty listening to this, but just the faff of trying to use your own save game on your own goddamn console to play a game you've already bought and owned and is... Yeah.
Maybe you shouldn't have forgotten your password.
Well, yes, perhaps. I mean, yeah, I mean, I managed to get through, you know, if you go to the right website and fill in the right amount of details, they'll deign to allow me to use my save games again, which was jolly generous of them. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Microsoft. A cap in hand, you know. Please, can I play my game? I've had enough. Damn it. I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore.
So you're not going to play any more games because every single one of them wants some form of login somewhere along the go?
Probably. I mean, PC games seem generally all right with that, but a lot of them do it
behind
the scenes as well. I know. I'm decided I'm going to, I don't know, just play MMOs because at least I knew that's what I was signing up for in the first place. You can understand an MMO wanting your payment information and wanting server connections and stuff because that's
I think MMOs have the most restrictive DRM possible. It's always on connection gone
yeah,
mad.
Yeah, down with MMO DRM. Grr.
Of course, that's why everyone loved MMOs back in the day when they were getting popular.
It's very difficult to pirate an MMO, I suppose.
People are managing,
though. Well, server emulation, but it's, you know, connecting to official servers is almost impossible to pirate. Yeah. Oh, I'm going to sit here and seethe a bit while you talk.
Okay. I started playing Saboteur as well.
Oh, okay.
I bought it for £4 off Amazon.
You're playing it on the PC?
Yeah, I'm playing it on the PC.
And I've got the console. Wow. A crazy, topsy-turvy world of misrule.
It does really drive home that just putting a bit more resolution on a game will make it still look good, even though it's, what, 5-6 years old
I don't
now?
Know. I've got an SD telly, so lost on me. But
yeah,
does it work on the PC?
Yep, it does. It has a couple of annoying things. One, you've got to have the DVD in the drive.
Oh, Jesus.
I've had to put in an activation code and activate it now. Yeah, anyway, so that no longer happens.
I don't know what... this is a topic show and a half, yeah. I tell you. We'll come back to this another show, I think.
Yeah, one patch later and that no longer does that.
Was it an official patch?
It was officially made by someone.
Excellent.
That's the one saving grace of PCs. At some point, everyone's just going to hack it all anyway. And
Is that wrong? Is it wrong to use a crack on a game you've already bought to allow it to play without the disc in?
On my computer here, which does not have a built-in disc drive.
yeah. That's the only way you can play it. Hmm. We'll come back to this.
If it's wrong, I don't want to be right. Or something. Mm. Yeah, it's quite good. I still like that game. It's fun. Right, I'm going to talk about Steam badges.
Okay. Yeah, tell me about these.
Steam badges. I got into the beta because one of our listeners hates me.
That's mean. Don't hate him. He's disadvantaged.
No, I don't know whether or not it was a subtle hint you should look at this or because he, like you said, he had one and thought I might like to have a look.
Fair enough.
And so I'm now in this Steam beatery thing, which...
Steam beater. Oh, God, what fresh hell have you invented now?
So what we got here is we go over somebody's thing here.
How much did it cost you to be in your Steam beater?
Nothing. It's for free.
I saw a Steam pop-up after logging out of a game that doesn't even use Steam, Star Trek Online, and it popped up with something called Planetary Annihilation or something.
Yeah.
There was a big flash screen, and I thought, oh, that looks interesting. And this is... Apparently, it's a Steam Workshop game something.
It was a Kickstarter that's just gone into alpha, and I know where you're going with this.
The price tag was £70.
You don't worry. When it goes into beta, it goes down to £50, I think.
Well, who is paying £70 to take part in an alpha? And since when did Steam steal Kickstarter and start their own version? There I go again. Carry on.
Okay, right. So here we have, say, somebody who's not in the... There you go. So we have an example person here. I won't say who
it is. There's an example person. I can see their name and the listener can't.
Yeah, they're playing Sins of a Solar Empire, which is a really nice game.
It's a good game. I have no anger about that.
So they are currently level 5.
Well done, you.
which means they've basically got that for being 8 years of service.
Wow. So you've picked a friend off your friends list and you've clicked on a thing and now you're looking at a list of badges. Yeah,
when you hover over it, it says what their Steam level is. Now these are
Steam level.
Yeah,
okay.
These are earned from
am I in there?
Badges. You are.
Find me. What's my Steam level? There it is.
Level 5.
I'm Steam level 5. I didn't even know I had a Steam level.
You got that from the one badge which has been in there for 8 years. There's also, you remember those old Pillar of the Community badge that has been there for ages?
No.
Which is join a group, comment on something and ever.
Fill in marketing details.
Yeah, that basically gives you some XP as well. Now, those two ones are the only free ones.
Right.
You also get badges which increase your level from buying something from a sale.
Yeah.
And doing things like that.
Yeah.
Or, and this is the new bit that's in beta, you can buy trading cards.
What?
So, if we go to my inventory here.
Right.
If I can actually click on it properly, we can see.
So you get levels and XP for just giving them money, buying games or whatever.
Yeah, well, at specific times.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's not just a multiplier off of your amount spent then.
No, that would be good. They should do that.
That would be honest.
So here we are. We've got, in my item inventory, I've got Steam items. So
okay,
we've
got some Borderlands 2
things. I've got some Borderlands 2 ones, and I've got an FTL one.
Okay, what are we, game card?
Yeah, these drop while you play games.
Right.
So I was playing Borderlands 2 for just a couple of hours the other night. I got them all, and I got 3 drop. And basically, I need to get 6 different ones in order to get the XP.
Can we just examine the use of the word need there?
Let's not go.
All right, let's not throw that into sharp relief just yet.
No, I had 3. I've now got 2.
What happened? Did you get one taken away for not buying enough?
These are tradable on the marketplace.
Oh.
So I put one up and I made a princely sum of 48p selling one.
Yes, but now you're 4 cards away from completing your set.
But I'm up 48p.
Which probably won't buy you a rare card that you were looking for.
Well, no, it won't even buy me one because they're 54p or something and the rest goes to profit to the publisher.
I suppose giving people who make games money for making games is good, but...
Giving them for stupid collectible card game thing which is related to levels that mean nothing and is stupid and rubbish and bollocks.
Horrifically cynical, it really does.
Oh, it is, it's horrendous.
Bearing in mind that we're free-thinking 30-somethings with disposable income of sorts. Well, you are.
Put it this way. If Microsoft pulled this on the new Xbox,
yeah,
there'd be hell to pay. Yeah. It'll be everywhere. Steam do it. No one gives a toss.
But, you know, talking sort of 14-year-olds and Pester Power and all of that, this is just Magic the Gathering in an electronic form, really, is it?
Yeah. So you've
Which
got
is always sinister.
You've got these cards, right? And
can you do anything with these cards? Is there like a game?
You can trade them.
And what else? What other utility do these things have? They count towards Steam levels and badges if you get the set?
Yeah, you get the set, it gets you a badge which goes towards your Steam level.
Okay, you have to ask what the Steam level does. Does the Steam level give you discounts on Steam, all Steam games? Based on your level?
Good God, no.
That would be nice. That's what I'd do. I'm a lot more beneficent than Steam, obviously.
Yeah, so there we can see that I sold it for...
Wow.
24.09 some currency I don't quite recognise.
Right, they made up their own currency, are they?
No, it's for some European country.
Oh, yeah. Fair enough. Okay, which translates to 49p.
Yeah. So currently, they've gone up. They're now up to 59p.
You're making money playing games.
Yeah.
Awesome, dude.
Or I can... Oh, the foil cards have gone down from a tenner down to 420.
What? Foil?
There's some really rare drops which are worth more.
Foil is a physical property of a physical object.
No, I think you'll find now it's a flag in a database.
It's got a slightly... murky grey background instead of a normal one. I think I prefer the other one. It doesn't even reflect and shimmer when you tilt your monitor. Look,
what one sold there for 30 quid?
£30 for database entry. Getting angry again.
Yeah, it's complete bollocks and rubbish. Steam doesn't
disappoint.
Well, I
think this has been done before. This is Legends of Norrath, essentially. EverQuest 1 and 2, I think, both had, for a while, they came up with this playable card. Now, bear in mind, this is an actual playable card game that you can play with your friends in the game using a pop-up window, and was quite a solid sort of playable game. But you would find loot cards for doing various things or being a member, a premium member for so long and all the rest of it. Apparently, I never saw any of these cards ever drop on Monsters in World, but apparently when it launched, they did. And you'd fight your monsters in an MMO, and sometimes they'd drop cards, which you could use in this game. And I think the cards might have been tradable as well, some little marketplace and all the rest of it. And it just sort of died and went away now. Yeah. I think what they do nowadays is if you pony up for an actual sub of EverQuest 2, or probably 1, you are allowed a certain amount of virtual booster packs for this card game a month, which you can open up and just add to your collection and use those to play your game. I think even if you just sign up free-to-play, you get a one-off drop of a very large number of cards you can claim through the reward windows so that you can just play the basic game. And it was all right as a game, but it just never really took off and was the huge high-profile thing they thought it was going to be. And this looks very similar, to be honest, only there isn't an actual card game.
No, there's no card game. So here I've picked a certain person we both know.
Okay.
Who is
a pillar of the community.
A pillar of the community, yes.
I would say that's definitely so.
Yes, he has the pillar of the community.
He's definitely a pillar of the community.
He's level 8.
He's level 8.
5 years experience.
Okay.
5 years
count. You're going to shame him by calling out all the stuff he's done.
Yeah, I'm not going to say his name, but next time I see him, I will... Riddle Q, hey?
Uh-huh.
He got a badge for the Steam Holiday Sale 2012.
Is there a way to hide all this from casual mockery
you can
like we're doing?
Make your profile private, I think.
Mm.
He got
I bet that's not default,
Steam
though.
Summer Sale 2012.
Okay.
He's a corporate shill.
Mm.
This is Steam Holiday Sale.
Doesn't miss a sale.
No one
misses a sale in Steam. The whole point of Steam is to
wait
until the game you want is up for 75 pence or 75% or whatever. And what you don't buy from Steam normally. You just wait for sales and buy the thing you were looking for then.
Yeah.
You're doing it wrong if you're paying full price on Steam.
Yeah. Anyway, yes, it's all bollocks and rubbish, and people need to be angry at Steam
I'm
about this.
I'm quite cross, but well, the problem is, with all your barracking about next-generation consoles and my own rage-inducing experiences with my Xbox over the last week or so, I've decided that I'm going to be a PC gamer from now on. But Steam is basically PC gaming now,
yeah.
Isn't it?
And Steam is
and
just
Steam's,
as bad
Steam's
as everything
just
else.
As bad
it's
as
got
the
hideous DRM.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're... screwed everywhere. Steam, in fact, did it all first.
Yeah.
I'm blaming Steam for everything now.
Yeah.
The consoles are Steam's fault.
And there's no alternative, really. I suppose good old games, you know,
they
there's
have
a couple of
fake
peripheral. Yeah, I know they only really get the occasional quite old game, and some of them are fantastic old games, and I recommend good old games, because
yeah.
They do take all the DRM out. They don't seem to do all this sinister psychological cobblers every 5 minutes. But if the PC is becoming more and more essentially a Steam console, then it's just another shade of the same kind of grrr.
There you go, Steam console.
It's gone.
I think
I just felt something go pop in my head. I'm going to have to calm down a bit.
So
now.
I've basically decided now that I might as well just embrace everything, and I've ordered an Xbox
That's
One and PS4 for each room in my house.
Well, yeah, you either give in and accept all of it, the lack of privacy, the always-on DRM, the they know everything about you, the they send you all the marketing bump they want, or you walk away from gaming entirely, I think. It's odd as it sounds. It seems like MMOs are perhaps the last bastion of the old school, really. I don't know.
I think they are.
Because they've always been their own sort of internal thing. Yeah, they'll do cash shop hijinks and lockboxes and the rest of it, but at least it's all self-contained within itself, and you can sort of judge and gauge it as you go. I don't know.
Anyway, your go.
I've written C-Sharp Express there.
Coding podcast.
Visual C-Sharp 2010 I downloaded. There's an Express version, which is absolutely free. They require you to register
yep.
after 30 days.
And it should
days.
Be noted that it needs to be 2010 if you want to still support XP.
Yeah, there's a 2012 one that's designed for Windows 8 or whatever. But basically, if you want to get into programming, the tools are there and free. And I've decided that because I have quite a bit of time on my hands, and also I want to get certain key career skills back up to speed, I've decided to set myself a little programming project. So what I'm making is a virtual tabletop. You know, when you're doing pen and paper, Dungeons and Dragons and whatever, we have a Pathfinder session each week, a couple of us, and we just do it all with Mumble and bits of paper and actual dice rolls and pencils and things and books. And we just previously just been doing it with Mumble, you know, just chatting. And it's so far it works, but there's one area I think gets a little bit confusing and let down is the actual combat. Where normally, I suppose, if you're sat around a table, you'll have little miniatures and a map and stuff. Just spatial positioning, which is quite difficult to describe and visualise in your head from voice alone. So I've decided to try and build some sort of client-server chat client with updatey counters and pictures and so on. And it seems an achievable project. It's a solved problem already. There's other stuff out there, but I figured I'd have a go at making one of my own. And I'm really enjoying it. Visual C Sharp Express, I think, is probably a sandbox game rather than the theme park, really.
It's definitely open world. world.
It's quite open world. The crafting's amazing.
Yeah.
I haven't decided what class I want to go with yet, though. There's quite a lot of classes in
there.
There's an awful lot of classes in there. Like several tens of thousands of them, yeah. Which is much better than most MMOs. I don't know. I'm just sort of find the occasional evening where I would normally be just playing computer games all night. I've decided that actually I'm quite enjoying doing a little bit of coding here and there.
Yeah, welcome to my world.
Well, perhaps, yeah. We'll see. I think it's an achievable thing. I've no idea how long it'll take, but I've made quite a lot of progress with it already. I've got a little picture box window thing which you can put a background behind, so when you're scanning your maps from your adventure module or find your JPEGs and your online PDFs or whatever, you can load those up as a background. It draws a grid on the top. You can put little tokens and counters on it, move them around and stuff. I've not started the network stuff yet.
The network stuff's not as
hard
as you think.
Basically, I've got to build a sort of client-server type of thingy and have it talk and send where all the counters have moved to everyone else so it updates all their stuff. I found some decent examples. Stack Overflow website.
Don't tell everyone about Stack Overflow.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. It tells you all the answers. Programming's not difficult at all. They just want you to think it is.
I don't think there's a single developer on the planet who doesn't use Stack Overflow constantly.
It's a really intuitive thing as well. You just type C# in the Google search. Yeah. C# and what you're trying to do. And boom, up come about four different Stack Overflow articles explaining exactly what that particular thing is.
And each answer's rated as how good it is. Yeah. So the right one comes to the top.
Yeah, the best answer's at the top. And that then lets me get a little bit further. Then I'll search for the next thing I'm trying to do. Because I know how I want to build it. And I know enough about development to be able to construct the basic outlines of it all in my head. It's just the syntax of individual controls and functions and classes I've never actually used before. And it's just constant searching the internet and there's the answer, move on to the next bit, you know.
Without wanting to sound really, really old, I remember when we didn't have these internet-based tools to do it all. Oh, that was when we had books.
It's not even a tool, it's just a big old notice board where people ask questions and
experts
answer them.
If you didn't know how to do something, you didn't know how to do it.
Yeah, if you were lucky, there might have been a book out there, then you'd have to spend a couple of weeks reading a dusty old tome. But now the internet that's there and it is the sum total of human knowledge, a fingertip away. How can you not know how to do anything in this day and age? So yes, I'm a developer now. Developers are cool.
Talking of developers are cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to mention Doctor Who.
Go on then.
Because I keep having these moments when I manage to go a little while without remembering that there's only two episodes of Doctor Who between now and a year in October.
Doctor Who really fizzled for me this year. I just sort of lost interest almost entirely in the latest Matt Smith and what's-her-name, Jenna Louise Coleman.
Well, he's
Coleman.
Off now, so...
I know he's leaving. It wasn't necessarily him being bad either. I don't know, I've gotten a bit Doctor Who fatigue, really.
Well, it's okay, there's not going to be enough episodes to get fatigued.
Too many
ever.
Bill and Ted endings as well. I didn't like that. Not enough consequences. The pacing was all up and down this series, and I just got to the midway through, and I just sort of found myself not even bothering to turn it on a Saturday.
There is a rumour going around, which it's been going around for a little while now, but these rumours always do.
Yeah.
It's just... Now, it's weird, because a lot of people are now coming out and saying that they think that it's being confirmed, but everyone's saying it's confirmed with exactly the same or very close wording. So
right.
I can't tell whether or not source A is using website B as their source and B is using A.
Anyway, tell us the rumour.
The rumour is a large cache of lost episodes has been found.
Ah, they're always doing that.
No, they haven't found one for years.
It's evidence of time travel, clearly. Yeah. Are these episodes from the future?
No, they're episodes from the 60s.
Ah, right.
And the rumour is that there's a...
You know they're not going to be very good, don't you? There would have been a reason these things were thrown out in the first place, probably.
BBC incompetence. They did not just throw out the good stuff. They threw out stuff like regenerations and things that shouldn't have done, and whole Dalek stories and things like that. Yeah, and so if it is true, which it probably isn't...
Mm.
Then that would explain why there's this big quietness around the 50th anniversary.
Wow. Is that what they're going to do next year? Just rerun a whole load of 60s episodes in the primetime Saturday
That'd
slot?
That'd be brilliant.
Why is it all black and white? Who's that old guy?
Admittedly, it would be on BBC Four.
Ah. Uh-huh.
But yeah, they could do that.
Yeah.
And BBC Four doesn't start till 7 anyway. So
you know what? I'll watch the Christmas and New Year things, whatever, but I just think it's probably could go away again now. For a while, come back again fresh in like 5 years.
I think that's effectively what's happening at the moment.
Yeah.
It's on a break. It needs
one, I think.
Well, they made so few episodes in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
That we've had a half series last year, half series this year, two episodes this year, then nothing until next October. So maybe it'll come back with a bit
I don't know if it's a Russell T. Davis versus Stephen Moffat thing. I did like the Eccleston and Tennant stuff. They were all pretty good, but...
I don't...
I think it's me. I think it's not you, it's me.
I'm not too keen on Moffat. He He was good for individual episodes. I just don't feel that
he's a good writer. I don't know about the whole...
I would like a new showrunner, please.
Because his episodes from the Russell T. Davis era were some of the most interesting.
They were some of the best.
Yeah, but just, I don't know. I just had enough. I'm Doctor Who'd out.
Yeah.
Which is a terrible thing to have to admit. And I'm probably going to get hate mail. Never mind.
Well, I'm still willing to give it a go, but then again, I did start watching Doctor Who again from the beginning, and I'm a bit annoyed that if these new episodes do come along, they're going to be out of sequence for when I should have watched them, and they better not find Marco Polo. That's all I'm going to say.
All right.
Actually, that'd be a really bad one. It's really boring.
Shall we wrap up, or have you got loads more to talk
about? Do you want
to talk
about your last thing, then we can wrap up?
Well, that's what I learned this week. I learned this week that using a wet palette is fantastic for painting miniatures.
It's very true.
I sometimes paint toy soldiers when the mood takes me. Little Games Workshop-y things. Malifaux at the moment. They're a fiddly nightmare. They're so fine and detailed compared to the Games Workshop orcs I'm usually doing. And normally I just paint straight out of the pot. Daub, daub, daub. But she showed me how to do the wet palette thing, which is essentially a damp sponge. Wet sponge? Damp sponge?
Dampy wet.
Dampy wet sponge with some greaseproof paper on the top. And then you put your paints on top. And I've got a little pipette dropper thing for mixing water into the paints as well. And I'm mixing colours as well. Normally I just do it painting by numbers from pots. But it's really good. Keeps the paint wet and usable for quite a long time. And just putting about 50-50 water and paint with the usual Citadel miniatures or whatever makes it much more easier to work with on a fine brush. It's like painting with inks.
Everyone should
lots of more layers.
Use wet palettes. They are fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
And they are incredible.
Simple idea, but works well.
They cost about £1 to make.
Well, exactly, yeah. Don't buy any expensive guff from Games Workshop or whatever.
No, Games Workshop don't sell one.
They won't do them, will they? Because this method encourages you to not need to buy paint so often because you're mixing it with water. I'm sure they'd much prefer it if you just daubed it straight out of the pot.
Well, this is a company which we could cynically suggest that maybe have a design of paint pot designed to dry out.
I could believe that. Yeah. What did you learn this week?
I learned that you can't trust memories.
Really?
You don't know who's gone in and remixed them.
Ah, fair enough. Yeah, I don't trust my own memory. It's not very good at the best of times.
No, mine isn't either.
Do your spiel.
You can catch us on howtomurdertime.com, where we have stuff, and I'm putting up old episodes.
I saw you did a blog post. I haven't blog posted in a long time.
I did a blog post.
I think
post.
I may have lost my blog mojo.
Yeah, I got another blog post coming. I want to do some reviews as well.
It was a ranty thing about Xbox DRM, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
And go along and have a read.
And how rubbish Xbox DRM is. Mm.
And we might be looking at a topic show soon about...
Yeah.
This kind of thing, probably, because there's lots to rant about.
You can also catch me on Moving On, which in...
What's this week?
There isn't one this week.
Oh.
We're on a summer break due to... me and Brecky recorded a live show doing the Apple keynote jobby, and it went on for 2 hours. And by the end of it...
I have to admit I haven't listened to that yet, but I'm sure I'll find time soon.
Yeah. By the end of it, Torag really needed to go off and play Pathfinder so we can start recording that, and I really needed to go off
and watch... He chose us over you. It was great.
No, and I really needed to go off and watch the season finale of Game of Thrones.
fair enough. Has your schedule even got room for a week off? Because you're like booked out with movies to watch until 2015.
We've got 2 weeks off now. We've now got movies to 2018 because of it. And the next one is Bill and Ted's Adventure Time.
Excellent Adventure.
That's the one.
Is it? Or is it a Bogus Journey?
No, it's Excellent.
Okay.
Because I don't like Bogus Journey as much. Excellent Adventure's better.
It is a fresher, more innocent thing, yeah.
You can also catch me on Xbox and Steam and stuff. Should I create a Steam group for the show?
Yeah, go on then.
Yeah.
Since it already owns my soul and all my games.
Yeah, I might do that before I mention this. If so, there'll be a Steam group called How to Murder Time. Add me on Steam anyway. I'm saying, can you come get everything through that? You can also catch me on the Apple stuff as Senyek as well, because Game Room's brilliant, apparently. Although in iOS 7, Game Room's a lot flatter.
Can't catch me anywhere, because I'm going to become a digital hermit.
And you can catch us next week, where we have another show about more stuff.
See you later.
Goodbye.